Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football inclusive.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Show. This is our draft recap special. I'm Daniel Moglione. On the line with us, as always, is our draft guru, Justin Van Fulpen. Justin, good morning. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been a long 3 days, but great times.
I hear you, and right next to me, as always, is the Reverend Ralph Mancini on Sunday mornings, and anytime we do the show during draft season. Rev, how's it going? Are you pumped up?
Absolutely. Today is Judgment Day.
Exactly. We're giving out our, you know, not necessarily grades per se, but we're going to go over each round, one through seven, talk about some of the top value picks in each round, maybe a couple of teams that reached here and there. We're going to talk about the winners, the losers in this draft, which teams did the best, which teams maybe didn't help themselves as much as they could have. Also on tap, Mr. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, one of our favorite guests, one of the top minds in football in terms of the media, particularly when it comes to the draft. He really gets it. He loves it just as much as we do. We also have our very own Ben Klein joining us to talk about his winners and losers and his evaluations of the draft. Also, a couple of draftees, Corey Peters and John Connor, a couple of Kentucky boys, will be joining us today, so we're going to get them on together and have a little fun with them. But let's get right to it, fellas. First round, let's kick it off. It was a crazy, crazy first round, a lot of interesting picks. Justin, we'll start with you here. Who do you think was some of the throw one or two of the top value picks in round number one? Not just the best player, but, you know, factoring in where the teams were able to grab that player.
You know, what the position I really liked is what the Detroit Lions did, getting up and going as far as and going to get number 30 at Javid Best, they're the running back, because they needed a top-notch running back. And obviously, jumping up there and back in the first round, just, you know, swapping the fourth, giving up a seventh and their second-round pick, I thought that was a great value what they did to be able to get number one, Ndamukong Suh at number two, and then Javid Best at 30. So those two guys, I thought, because they're going to be immediate impact starters for the Detroit Lions and make that team a whole lot better going into next season.
Hey, Rev, what do you think about those two guys? How do you think the Lions did there in that first round, grabbing Sue at number two, grabbing Javid Best? I got to agree with Justin. I think you can make the case that even value, Sue is the best pick in this first round. I mean, they got the best player in the draft at number two. And honestly, I think he's more than just the best player in this draft. As I've been saying all through the offseason, I don't think I've ever been as high as on any defensive player coming into the NFL. I don't know. You may have to go back to Charles Woodson maybe to find somebody that I really liked a lot coming out of college. As much as I love Sue, I think even though number two is the second pick overall, they got themselves, in my opinion, I think the kid's going to be a Hall of Fame player. I know that's hard to say this early, and it's a lot to put up, and it's like, wow, that's almost an unreachable standard. But if this kid doesn't make multiple Pro Bowls and isn't a game-changing defensive player, I feel like I'm going to be a little disappointed.
Well, you know, sometimes people are a little too liberal with throwing comparisons around, but that comparison to Reggie White really sticks in terms of just pure strength, pure dominance. And, you know, the thing with Ndamukong Suh, he comes in and he makes the players behind him so much better. And the Lions do have talent on that defense. You know, I think he makes a player like DeAndre Levy a lot better and other guys like that. And as far as Javid Best goes, you know, I think that was a terrific pick as well. He adds some juice to that defense, you know, in terms of being a pass catcher, in terms of being a guy who can, you know, bust out some big runs. But, you know, I like the pick just as long as, you know, they don't lean on him too much, just as long as they realize he's more of a situational runner and, you know, maybe don't abuse him like the Philadelphia Eagles did with Brian Westbrook, whose career, you know, is close to the end right now. So I think him together with Kevin Smith, if Kevin Smith comes back and it looks like he's doing okay in his recovery, I think that duo should do pretty well for that Lions offense.
Yeah, I think the Lions really helped themselves. I think there's a bunch. We're going to talk a little bit more about the big winners, but I think this draft worked out where a lot of the bad teams did end up helping themselves. That's how it's supposed to set up. It doesn't always work that way, which is often why we see the same teams drafting over and over and over again in the top 10, because they didn't really help themselves in previous years. But I think this year a lot of the bad teams did improve their rosters big time, obviously helped by the fact that this was such a deep draft. Reverend, I'll throw it to you. Give me a couple guys that you thought were great value picks in this first round.
Well, obviously, I have to start with Dez Bryant at the 24th spot. I think Dallas gets a top-five talent. And what's great about this pick, he's not expected to come in and be the number one target as a rookie, you know, with the likes of a Miles Austin and Jason Witten and three terrific running backs in that offense. So I think he should fit in quite nicely. And then I like Dan Williams that went to the 26th spot to Arizona. Arizona hasn't had much luck picking interior linemen recently, as evidenced by selections of Alan Branch, Gabe Watson. But D-Will has a perfect build for a nose tackle, 6'2", 230. He stays low, locks up guys. He's a very heady defender, great pick. And I also love Kyle Wilson, the 29th pick, to the New York Jets. I thought he was a top 15 talent. He fits in well as a press corner, and Rex Ryan's aggressive, blitz-happy 3-4 scheme.
Yeah, Rev, I think those were all interesting picks. Rev, I think it's interesting you put in Dez Bryant, because you weren't always that high on Dez, and you were somebody that in your mocks often had him going in the 20 range. You know, most of us had him going a lot earlier, closer to the top 10. You often had him going around 20 or so. So how come you think he's great value here?
Well, I think he's great value, number one, for the team that he goes to. And look, I never had any qualms about him talently in terms of his physical tools or physical skills. And, you know, you're looking at the number one, hands down, the number one receiver in this draft. So I always thought that in terms of talent, he was a top 15 guy. The only reason why I knocked him down a little bit was because of the character concerns.
And, Justin, what do you think of Dallas getting Dez at that point, trading up to get to him? I know we heard a lot about, well, you know, he didn't want to miss out on the next, quote-unquote, Randy Moss like he did once upon a time. What are your thoughts about Dallas snagging Mr. Dez Bryant at Oklahoma State? Is he going to be their number one receiver sooner than later?
Well, I think, you know, definitely he's got the talent, the ability to, but also I think it's a good position for Dez to be able to go in there. He doesn't have to be that number one guy. I mean, they've got Miles Austin. They've got Roy Williams. They've got Patrick Creighton. They've got Jason Witten. So they've got a lot of talent on that offense as far as catching the football. My only qualm was with, you know, Dallas saying, hey, do they really need, could they have gotten somebody else to really help that team, you know, become a perennial, you know, Super Bowl challenger, because they need some help on the offensive line. They need some help as far as defensively in that secondary. So, I mean, getting Dez Bryant, yes, that's a great pick and stuff like that, but they need some more help. They need a tackle. They need a left tackle because they let Flozell Adams go. Unless they're thinking about re-signing him, they need help there. So I was kind of a little, you know, question of saying, hey, why did they take him there? I know as far as, hey, you take the best value on the board and, hey, you don't want Randy Moss, you know, to come back and kill you like, you know, Moss did on Thanksgiving a number of years ago. And I get that. But you could have made your team a lot better, because you're only going to see Dez Bryant if he's on another team, if he's with Baltimore maybe once, you know, once or twice in his career standpoint there. So I think the challenge or the thought of, hey, this guy could be a Randy Moss and could come back and burn us, I think was, you know, something that Dallas shouldn't have done. They should have gotten a left tackle there and helped themselves out there.
And how about Dan Williams? Dan Williams there late in the first round, dropping down there. I know you were pretty high on Dan, Justin. What did you think about him going that late and the value there?
Well, I think it was a great value because, I mean, they're trying to get back to that 3-4 defense, and they've just been subtly kind of transitioning to it. This guy gives them a nose tackle, kind of what the refs said about, hey, they've missed on some of these other guys, interior defensive linemen. And, hey, he was a guy who could have gone 12 to, you know, Miami or even 9 to Buffalo. So to get him where the Arizona Cardinals did and to kind of fit as a guy who they could need and who now they could say, hey, we've got our, you know, front three there in that 3-4 defense. Now we can add some linebackers, you know, into that system. We've added Joey Porter as an outside rusher there. So I thought that was a great value for them where they were picking and how it fits into their scheme. So I think when we're talking about, you know, fit the scheme type of standpoint, that was a great value there with the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I actually thought I thought it would have been something if he fell to Miami, considering that a lot of people thought Miami could get him at 12. I was like, wow, imagine if Miami gets Big Dan Williams at 28. that really would have been something. We got somebody from the chat room, G Money, says in his opinion Seattle had an outstanding first round. And G Money, I couldn't agree with you more. I think they got two great value picks there. Russell Okung, who most of us think was the top left tackle in this draft. They got him at number six. Most people had him pegged going earlier. We did have Trent in our last mock draft at number four. Good call by the Rev. And by the way, when I spoke to Trent during the week and I told him number four, Washington Redskins, he had a smile ear to ear thinking that he might go at number four. So I know he was a very happy man to go there. But I think even better value than Russell Okung at number six, I love getting Earl Thomas at number 14. Now, I know at least one person in the country doesn't agree with me. That's Mr. Taylor Mays. He thought Pete Carroll should have gone in a different direction. But, Rev, let me ask you first. What do you think of Okung going at number six with Seattle? It's got to be pretty good value there. No, when you got what many people consider the number one guy at that premium position at number six.
Well, yeah. I did predict that Trent Williams was going to go to the Washington Redskins, but that doesn't mean that I agreed with that pick. I thought Russell Okung was the far and away the most dominant tackle out there in terms of strength, you know, in terms of his long arms, and in terms of just being a solid guy without a lot of question marks. I thought he was the best pick, and I thought he was the safest pick among the guys at his position.
And, Justin, let me throw it to you. How about that second pick with Seattle? I thought it was one of the better picks in the first round. Strong safety, Earl Thomas. The kid, hey, we shouldn't even put a position in front of him. He can play strong safety. He can play free safety. He can help you out at corner. I think Pete Carroll's going to use him very well. He's going to have an outstanding NFL career, one of the top safeties in the league. He's another kid that I think has the potential to be a perennial Pro Bowl player. How did you like that pick at number 14 for the Seahawks?
I thought it was great because I think everybody thought as far as the Eagles, when they traded up, they were going to go ahead and get Earl Thomas. They were going to get that safety because that was all the talk and that was the rumor mill that, hey, so when they made that trade, you know, everybody's saying, okay, hey, Earl Thomas, Earl Thomas is here. But they go ahead and take Brandon Graham, and then Seattle goes and take Earl Thomas. And to my opinion, Earl Thomas could have been a top 10, you know, safety. You could have saw him going 7 to the Cleveland Browns because they really liked Eric Berry, and he was a guy who, you know, in a lot of people's mind, you know, was better in some standpoints of his game than Eric Berry as far as, you know, so I think that was a great value for Seattle to go ahead and get a safety. They needed help at both safety positions. He's a center fielder, can play in zone coverage, really shows great instincts, and, you know, really excels at the ball, his ball skills. So he's a guy who I really liked a lot. And obviously, I mean, Seattle, you know, we saw, hey, Taylor Mays got upset that, you know, Seattle and his former coach took, you know, Earl Thomas over him. But, hey, he shouldn't be upset because Earl Thomas is a heck of a lot better player than what Taylor Mays is.
All right. There you go, Taylor. You shouldn't be upset, buddy. A better player got taken in front of you. Although I got to say, on the Twitter, man, the USC fans are kind of sensitive out there, baby. When you say something bad about Taylor Mays, they come out in full effect. It was neck and neck. If you knocked Taylor Mays or Colt McCoy, the Twitterati were coming after you. They didn't want to hear that stuff there. Rev, another pick I liked a lot in the first round was the New England Patriots. What else is new? The Pats make a smart pick, in my opinion, going with Devin McCourty at 27. You brought up Kyle Wilson with the Jets at 29. How about McCourty at 27? I think a similarly talented player and an outstanding special teams kid. And McCourty isn't just a return guy. He's a guy who's a great gunner. He's a kid that can block punts and kicks. So he can really be a dynamic Pro Bowl-type return man as well. And I think he, in a year or two, he's going to be the best cover man in New England.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing to know with Bill Belichick and guys like Bill Parcells, you know, they not only look at athletic ability, but they want smart guys on their team. And that's what Devin McCourty is. You know, he is a guy that anticipates, a guy that reads routes, so a guy that makes plays not only because of his athletic ability, but because of his study in the film room and also his anticipation and his instincts. And you mentioned his special teams ability. I mean, I think this guy has the talent to be an all-pro player down the road.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Draft Digest show here. It is our draft recap. Don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can still get the Draft Bible PDF. And believe me, folks, it's still great value, in my opinion. I think it's still a great product. If you want to learn about some of these players, you want to learn about the guys who went to your team. This is the great way to do it, the profiles, the interviews, the feature columns. And also, don't forget, get on it early, $7.99, our draft recap and fantasy football preview PDF. That's right, our fantasy football PDF as well. So get that now, $7.99 for the PDF. It'll get you ready. It'll, you know, it'll fill in all the information regarding the past draft and get you ready for 2010 fantasy season. If you haven't started already, you better hurry up. Don't sleep on that, because there's other people out there who are doing, who got their fantasy war rooms going on.
Huh.
You know, Justin, a pick I liked a lot as well in the first round was, it was criticized by, I think, quite a few people, and that's at number 9, the Buffalo Bills going with C.J. Spiller. I know they might have had bigger needs, and they had some running backs there. I mean, I read in a paper this morning here in New York, you're taking Spiller when you have Lynch and Jackson, and I'm like, wow, really? Oh, you have Lynch and Jackson. Oh, my. I mean, what a dynamic running duo. I think C.J. Spiller is a game changer on offense, and I think that's exactly what the Buffalo Bills needed at any position, you know, whether it be quarterback, wide receiver, or running back. It might not be necessarily the best fit. I'm sure he'd rather be going to Detroit, where Jahvi Best is going, where they're rebuilding an offensive line and have a running game where they won't focus on him. But I think still, for Buffalo to get such a dynamic player who I thought should have been a locked top 10 pick in C.J. Spiller, I really like what they did there. Justin, what's your thoughts on C.J. going up there to Buffalo? They used to have O.J., now they have C.J.
Well, I like that, you know, there. I mean, I think the player standpoint, is that he's a great player and a dynamic player, and there's no doubt about that, and we can't question what he did there at Clemson. But I think as far as the fit there in Buffalo, I really don't see that being a great fit for him, just because, you know, hey, yeah, they do need playmakers, but what else do they have? They don't have a quarterback. You know, as far as Lee Evans is their best receiver, he's a smaller kind of speedster guy. But, I mean, yeah, they have Marshawn Lynch, who's been okay, you know, in the past, you know, as far as kind of being a more physical runner. You know, so my whole thing is hey, what are they going to do? I mean, they need more help on that just besides C.J. Spiller. So it's a nice piece. And so hopefully, you know, 2 years from now, he can be a guy who can be a game changer there of, hey, because they've got other pieces around him, they've got a quarterback. Because I think right now, defense is that they're going to say, hey, we got to stop C.J. Spiller. And when you make an offense one-dimensional, what the Buffalo Bills are going to do there with him, you know, that's what he's going to stop. So I don't think as far as, I mean, I know everybody wants to say, hey, he's going to be a great fantasy guy. I think we want to hold off on that because as far as the quarterback situation is bad and the receivers aren't that great. So he's going to be a good player for them, but not going to be the great player he can be, and hopefully down the road if they add some more pieces.
Sure, fair enough. I mean, he's not going to, you know, win the Super Bowl or lead them to the playoffs in year one. I don't think anybody's thinking that, but still, I think they got a really good guy there. And, you know, if you want to look at a Chris Johnson, it's not like there's a lot of dynamic offensive weapons around Chris Johnson in Tennessee either in terms of, you know, the wide receiver position. They've had a lot of inconsistent quarterback play. Obviously, not as bad as the Buffalo Bills. Nobody's saying that,
yeah,
but, you know.
Johnson had a better supporting cast.
Yeah.
Came to Tennessee.
Not significantly better, though. I mean, I can't say Tennessee is known for their offensive playmakers.
Well, they had
Chris
a better
Johnson
offensive
there.
Line, though.
True, true. Rev, how about biggest reach? What's your biggest reach? If I had to pin you down to one guy, who would you give me as your biggest reach in round one? You know, I'm looking at your sheet. You got a couple guys written down, and I got it down to two. Throw me one of those two.
Well, I wanted to go with Tyson Alualu because I don't think anybody was going to take him that high with the 10th spot that Jacksonville took him with, but I really have to go with Tim Tebow. No, look, Tyson Alualu I think is going to be a solid player. I just think that, you know, he was taken a bit too high. But with Tim Tebow, I mean, you're taking the ultimate hit-or-miss player in the first round. I mean, Coach Josh McDaniels could be digging his own grave with this pick. This is how serious it is. Look, as everybody saw in the SEC championship game versus Alabama, Tim Tebow isn't very good at playing from behind when he's faced with complex zone coverage schemes that he's going to see at the NFL level. His delivery is a concern, as is his accuracy, especially on deeper balls. So, I mean, you got a guy who's a project. You're making him your first-round pick. You don't know what you got here. This guy might not be able to play in his first couple of years. He needs a lot of work. He's a developmental guy. This is the type of player you take in the third, fourth, even fifth round. You don't take him with your first round pick. An awful, awful job by the Broncos and Josh McDaniels here taking Tim Tebow.
Did you say dig his own grave? Maybe he drafted the one player who could resurrect him if he does fall into the grave. I'm sorry, Rev. I couldn't help myself. Justin, who's your big reach in round number one? If it's not Tim Tebow, who is it?
Well, it's got to be, I mean, Tyson Alualu. I mean, just because of, hey, I agree with Rev. I think he's going to be a very good player. But the thing is, and I know, hey, Jacksonville's, you know, philosophy was, hey, he was our guy. We wanted to get him. But you got to be able to manipulate the draft better. And I'll give Josh McDaniels the credit there. He was able to manipulate the draft to be able to trade down, still get the two guys he wanted in Demaryius Thomas and Tim Tebow. But Jacksonville could have traded down and gotten more picks and still got Tyson Alualu because he was a guy that maybe would have been a late first round pick, early second round type guy. I mean, that's what the kind of the league kind of had a grade on him. So I understand, hey, if you don't, you know, you trade down, you get that. I understand that you want, hey, your guy. But, hey, I thought he was the biggest reach. He was the biggest surprise, especially when you're talking about the dollars that you're going to have to pay Tyson Alualu. He's not going to ever play like a top 10 pick, which you're going to have to pay him that way. So that was the biggest reach, in my opinion.
All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest show here on the Fantasy Sports Channel and All Access Football Radio. Remember to go to NFLDraftBible.com for all your post-draft recap. We also have constantly updating the undrafted free agent board. We have the tracker going on there, getting all the players who have been signed. We've been working at that since basically 30 seconds after the draft ended. I know, Justin, you've been doing a great job with that. Our boy Bo Marchant has also been getting us some players, so we're trying to get as many of those players for you as soon as possible so you can know which guys have signed with your team. But, fellas, it's time to move on to the second round. I mean, we could talk about the first round basically for the full 2 hours if we wanted to, but it's only a two-hour show and we got more stuff to talk about. So let's go to the second round. And, Rev, I'm going to start with you. Give me your top two value picks of the second round in this 2010 draft.
Well, there are a few guys here, but the two guys I'm going to go with, number one, Rob Gronkowski went to New England with the 42nd pick. I thought he's a first-round talent. Very big guy, tall, 6'6", long arms, big and strong enough to block defensive ends, but also has the hands, athleticism, and route-running ability to make plays with the ball in his hands. The other guy was Charles Brown, and it sort of surprised me. I really was trying to figure out what went on here. You know, here's a guy that a lot of people had going, sometimes even in the first half of the first round, fall all the way to the bottom of the second round, went to New Orleans with the 64th pick. You know, he gets a bad rap for not being much of a run blocker, but if you watch some tape from his senior year, you'll see him drive block and open up lanes for his running backs. I think he has great feet. He's a former tight end. He might have fallen because of a medical condition. That's what I'm hearing. But I'm going to go with Gronkowski and Charles Brown as my value picks.
All right, Justin, let me throw it to you. Actually, before I throw it to Justin, Rev, I really love your first guy, and that's Rob Gronkowski. I spoke to Rick on Saturday morning when he hosted his show from Radio City, and through the first three rounds, that was actually one of my favorite picks overall. I just think it was a great pick for New England, and, you know, unlike what Justin was talking about with CJ, I think it's a great spot for Gronkowski to go to as well, where, you know, he's got a great system there. He's got Tom Brady. I just think they're going to make each other better players. It's been a while since Brady has had this kind of dynamic weapon at the tight end position. I think Gronkowski is just going to be a red zone machine. He's going to be able to stretch the field down the middle. And if you pay too much attention to those wide receivers on the outside, he's going to eat you up. He's going to tear you up. And he's not a bad blocker either on top of that.
Yeah, and the thing is, he does have a deep threat like Randy Moss that he's playing with. So, you know, he's not going to see two guys in him. He's going to see a lot of single coverage. So I think that works in his favor.
Yeah, if Gronkowski's healthy, I think he's going to be an immediate impact player for a long time in the NFL. Justin, how about you? Who are your top two value guys in the second round of this 2010 draft?
Well, I got to talk about Jimmy Clausen. I mean, being number one, my top value guy going to the Carolina Panthers in the second round. I had him as my ninth overall player on the board. I mean, I just thought he's a guy. I know you guys disagree with me as far as him being a franchise-type quarterback, but I think that's what he's going to be. And in Carolina, it's a great fit for him. He's got two dynamic running backs. He's got a for a dynamic receiver in Steve Smith. They added Brandon LaFell from LSU. They've got a great offensive line. I think Jimmy Clausen is going to go in there and be the starter sometime, if not from, not opening day. He's going to be the starter sometime there in Carolina. He, that franchise is going to be his. And, yeah, I know there's concerns that, hey, he's kind of cocky, kind of overconfident, maybe not the greatest of teammates, but the guy can spin it. And the guy can throw the football. He's got, he can make all the NFL throws, and I think he's going to be a starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers sometime this year. And my second guy is Sergio Kendall there with the Baltimore Ravens. I thought they got a great value. They're always looking for pass rushers in the Terrell Suggs type of mold. And I know there was some concerns and kind of what you heard of his, hey, why he was slipping was because of a, you know, as far as a knee injury. Baltimore passed him medically, you know, so other teams passed him medically. So he's a guy to me who, you know, hey, those concerns are going to be far, you know, far as in the past, hopefully. And we're going to talk about a guy who could be a Pro Bowl type player. And when we're looking back 3 years in the draft, we're saying, hey, why didn't this guy go in the top, you know, 20 in the first round? So those two guys, I think, when we're looking back through this draft, we're going to say, hey, these two guys should have been the first-round picks.
Hey, Rev, I'm going to give you a couple guys, maybe not necessarily the quote-unquote value guys in terms of what we're talking about, because they did not go necessarily lower than they were expected. But a couple of picks that I really liked a lot were Dexter McCluster to the Kansas City Chiefs at number 36, and Cole Meese, the hybrid kid who's going to be an outside linebacker in the NFL at number 40 to the Miami Dolphins. What do you think? I know you like those hybrid guys, and they always intrigue you, Rev. What do you think of Bill Parcells snagging Cole Meese out of Utah to be his pass-rushing outside linebacker, I think?
Yeah, I like the pick. You know, a kid who plays hard, very dedicated guy, a guy that Parcells can mold. A guy that you can move around, a guy that plays very hard, and a guy that made a lot of plays at the collegiate level. I think that Parcells did a great job in this draft, and Cole Meese was part of the reason why I think this defense is really going to be improved. Hey, look, they just lost Jason Taylor. They needed to bring in at least a couple of those types of players, those outside linebacker, rusher type guys, and I think Cole Meese is the type of guy that, you know, even if he doesn't flourish in his rookie year, you know that he has the work ethic and the want to be a factor in his second year and have a good career in the NFL.
And, Justin, how about McCluster? Once again, it's not necessarily the great value in the way we normally use that term. Not a lot of people had him going that early, but I still think he's going to be a dynamic player in the NFL. I like Kansas City going for that playmaker guy there. They need that on their offense. What's your thoughts on McCluster going to KC?
Well, I think that was a great player there. Like you said, I thought he was drafted a little bit high as far as where he should be placed there. I thought it was more of a late second, early third-round pick than an early second-round pick. My only question is with him is, okay, hey, they've got a guy like Thomas Jones, and they've got, as far as the running back from Texas, the name slips my mind real quick, but, I mean, those are the guys that I thought they were going to kind of pound the ball and be the running back tandems. Now you bring in another guy, and I know you're going to be able to use him in multiple situations, but that's the thing. Is there enough balls to go around in that running back crew with Dexter McCluster, or are you only going to use him as more of a receiver? So I think it's going to be interesting to see what Kansas City does, and obviously Charlie Weiss comes in there as a new offensive coordinator and wants to be able to kind of get Jamaal Charles and get, you know, Thomas Jones and get McCluster the ball. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets all three of them the ball.
Rev, second round reach. Which direction are you going? Are you staying with the Denver Broncos back-to-back with your first and second round reaches, or are you going in a different direction?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my man Josh McDaniels here, who went with Zane Beatles, the offensive tackle slash offensive guard. He went with him with that 45th pick in the second round. Beatles, a college tackle with short arms. He will be moved to the guard position. You know, Denver takes him ahead of better, more physical blockers, such as a Vladimir Dukas and such as Mike Johnson out of Alabama. You know, Zane Beatles, you know, it never really impressed me. You watched him in the All-Star games. He got beaten on the bull rush. He needs to bulk up a little bit. I don't think he's ready to be a starter at that guard position. I thought this was absolutely a reach at that 45th spot. And then, you know, my other reach was Brandon Spikes out of Florida. Here's the guy whose stock plummeted like a rock after running at 5.0 in his 40-yard dashes. But it's not only that. Where was the production in his senior year? Had only 68 tackles as a senior, down from 131 as a sophomore. He does put himself in position to make plays, but he lacks the strength to consistently shed blocks. I do not like that pick of Brandon Spikes. I think he should have gone way down in this draft. I thought he should have been a fourth or fifth round pick, certainly not a second round pick.
All right, Justin, how about you? Who is your second round? What's your biggest reach in round number two?
I think Jermaine Cunningham from Florida, the New England Patriots. I know everybody praises Bill Belichick and how he manipulates the draft and stuff like that. But this guy, you're taking this guy 53 overall when he's a guy, to me, was in the 80s to, you know, 90s in overall value type of player. You know, didn't have a great, you know, senior season. You know, there were some questions about his maturity and overall football character and different things. This, I mean, he wasn't able to work out as his pro day because of a shoulder injury. Wasn't able to go to an all-star game because of, you know, the injuries and different things like that. And, hey, they're able to take the reaches and take a boom or a bust there on Jermaine Cunningham because he does have the ability, you know, possibly down the road. But to me, that was a big reach. And hopefully it works out for Cunningham. But I think that could be somebody you could say 3 years down the road and be like, oh, well, Belichick made a mistake here with Cunningham.
Yeah, I got to say I agree with all three of you guys with your analysis there. I think overall New England did an unbelievable job with their draft. But the two picks I wasn't crazy about was the two Florida Gators. And, Rev, I know you like Cunningham a little more, so defend your guy. I'll give you a chance there.
You know, the thing with Cunningham is, look, I understand what Justin is saying. He could have been picked a little bit lower. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think Jermaine Cunningham is going to be a solid player. I think he is going to be a good player, a guy who was very productive in college. As a matter of fact, if you compare him to Carlos Dunlap and you go through film, you'll see that Jermaine Cunningham most times played even better than Carlos Dunlap, a guy that at least plays hard, plays with a lot of effort. So he has the physical tools. If there's something lacking there, you know he's going to get coached up and you know he's going to improve. So, yeah, maybe, you know, he could have gone a little bit lower, but I think at the end of the day, I think Cunningham's going to be a solid player and he does have upside.
Well, and also, guys, let me point out there, while I wasn't crazy about either one of those picks, either Cunningham or Brandon Spikes out of Florida, the fact that the New England has so many picks, it does give them some leeway to take a flyer on a guy or two who could be a hit-or-miss type. So they kind of have that leeway that if one of their second-round guys, if one of their third-round guys doesn't pan out at all, as long as they did well with their other picks, they'll be okay. I mean, ultimately, it's not as if, you know, you even have room to add 10 quality football players. You know, you already have a really good team to begin with, so there's only so many guys you can have on the field at once. Great problem to have, though. Too many good football players. Round number three, Rev, let's take it there. Who's your top two value picks in the third round?
Well, I liked a couple of the offensive linemen that went in this draft, Jared Bell here, John Jerry. But I'm going to go with two receivers. I'm going to go with Damian Williams, who went to Tennessee with the 77th pick. He's a very polished route runner, decent size, enough speed to get open on deeper routes. I think he may already be better than Justin Gage or Nate Washington. This kid is NFL ready. Not saying he's going to be a superstar, but he's going to be very productive. Maybe could be like a Derek Mason type. And then the other guy, another wide receiver that I like here that went in the third round is Brandon LaFell out of LSU, went to Carolina with the 78th pick. A big physical wide out with great range to go down and make the difficult catch, but then again also drops the easy ones. But, you know, he's a terrific after-the-catch guy. He could be a younger version of Musin Muhammad. He looks like that type of player.
All right, Rev, going with a couple of wide receivers, a couple of pass catchers there in a draft that was deep at that position, not necessarily top-heavy, but I think solid depth, third, fourth, fifth rounds. There were some quality players there. Hey, even sixth round, I think a couple of good players went off the board who have a chance to start in the league at that position. Justin, let me throw it to you, third round, top value guys in round number three.
I really like, as far as Jerome Murphy there out of the St. Louis Rams, what he was able to pick him up. I mean, because he's a guy, to me, who could have been a, you know, late first, early second. We really wouldn't question that much. You know, going in the top of the third round, as far as they need some cornerback help there with the Rams, he's a guy who could come in and be a starter here, come immediately and really help that defense. And another guy, as far as that I really like, is Major Wright there with the Chicago Bears, what they did with the 75th overall pick there. Another guy who, hey, if he was drafted in the second round, no one would say anything because a lot of people thought he was in that top five safety group there. And so I thought what he brings is another need, another as far as fit what the Chicago Bears need as a playmaker in that secondary with those safety positions. So I think those two guys in the secondary really was pretty good steals there for the respective teams.
Yeah, I agree, Justin. I like both of those players as well. Big fan. I think another DB who went in the third round that was a very good pick was the safety right after Major Wright, also out of the SEC, and that's Chad Jones out of LSU. I think somebody that really elevated his game this past season. We've talked about him quite often during this draft process, and I think we're all pretty big fans of his game. Rev, what do you think of Mr. Chad Jones going to New York, and also intrigue you that they went safety in the third round, even though they signed the role? Does that kind of spell doom for Phillips and any chances he might have of coming back?
Well, yeah, that's the big concern there. You know, and they also acquired the safety, Deion Grant, that played for Seattle last year. So they're really insuring themselves, you know, against Phillips going down with another injury. Or maybe Phillips is not even ready to play right now. So, yeah, it does make you wonder. But you know what? If Phillips isn't ready and he does have to shut it down for a few more months or whatever it is, I think Chad Jones has tremendous upside. I think maybe he can play behind Deion Grant, at least in the early going, until he gets up to speed and acclimated to the NFL. But this kid has his all. And the thing that I like about him the most is he brings size, he brings toughness, and he brings good tackling ability. When he grabs a hold of you, you're going down. He's a technically sound guy, still a little bit raw, still a little bit rough around the edges. But, you know, in terms of speed, in terms of tackling ability, leaping ability, in terms of being a playmaker and ball skills, this guy has it all.
And, Rev, how quickly, how about Taylor? Actually, no, let me throw this to Justin. Taylor Price, the wide receiver out of Ohio to New England, another pick that I love from the Pats. What are your thoughts on him going late in the third round? I think this is a nice spot for him because while he's very talented, he's still kind of raw, didn't really play in a passing offense in Ohio, needs to work on his route tree, but I think this is a great spot where he doesn't need to step in right away and contribute, and he can have a year or two to develop with the Pats.
Well, definitely. He's a guy, to me, who's really a home run hitter. He's a guy, you know, obviously with the Wes Welker injury, you know, it's tough for the New England Patriots. They need an inside guy. I know Julian Edelman did a pretty remarkable job there in the playoffs, but this is a guy who could be that slot, who could be a guy who could be a home run type hitter, a small slot receiver who can, you know, who can really stretch the defense and make plays after the far as catching the football. So I really like what the New England Patriots did on that pick, and he's a guy, to me, who could have went in the second round where Jermaine Cunningham and Owen Wins everything and flopped those two guys. So I thought what the Patriots have done was pretty remarkable.
I don't disagree. I also want to throw one name out there as well, Jared Valdir, the offensive tackle from Hillsdale. I've been talking this kid up since we saw him play in the All-Star game. I think he's a potential left tackle at the next level. He is a little bit of a workout guy, so Oakland Raiders kind of makes sense. But third round, I thought great, great value for a small school prospect. Justin, we got G-Money in the chat room asking for our thoughts on another small school player, Andre Roberts from the Citadel. What's your take on Roberts going in the third round? Was that good value there, or did they reach a little bit?
Oh, I thought that was good value. I mean, this is a guy we saw him at the Senior Bowl. We saw what his ability was to be able to, as far as run routes, catch the football, and be a guy who can make some plays after the catch. And so he was a guy, to me, who we kind of talked about him going into this process. He kind of slipped a little bit, and then he kind of settled in where he should have been drafted. So I really like far as him getting drafted there in the third round.
All right, Rev, let's go to you. Give me one guy. Who's your biggest reach in the third round?
Well, I have to go with Armonte Edwards, who went to Carolina with the 89th pick. Look, I loved watching him play in college, but he's not going to be used as a quarterback. He's not big enough and not polished enough to be a quarterback right now. And look, if you're going to project him as a wide receiver at the NFL level, he never played that position at Appalachian State. So you're talking about a project who knows nothing about running routes or setting up defensive backs. I thought this was kind of a ridiculous pick this high in the third round. You know, I would have rather have gone with Armonte Edwards maybe in the sixth or seventh rounds. It's got upside, but you don't take him this high.
Yeah, Rev, I can't disagree. I was shocked that he went this high. We were, you know, in talking to people, scouts from teams, we were told that there was no doubt that Armonte would be drafted in this draft, but I never thought he would go this high. I have to admit, I got a little giggle from Draft Nasty talking about his quarterback skills, and let's not make him a wide receiver just yet. I don't know about that, Draft Nasty. I don't think he's going to be playing quarterback in the NFL unless we're talking Wildcat. Justin, how about you? Who was your biggest reach in round number three?
A guy who I didn't think was going to go this high based on his 40 time and his size is Renan Kernan from the Georgia Bulldogs that was drafted by the Tennessee Titans with a 97th overall pick. And he, to me, doesn't have the top-end speed, doesn't have great size, doesn't take great angles. I mean, he does make plays, made some tackles there in Georgia, but I don't think he's going to be, as far as physically able to take on that pounding, they're in a 3-4 defense, being a weak side linebacker. And so I think that was kind of a little bit high as far as him going there, what he did in the third round.
All right, folks, let's move on to round number four. And, Rev, I'm going to start with you in the fourth round. We only got a couple minutes here to tackle this one. Give me one or two guys quickly who you think it provides the best value in round number four, the start of day three. Who are some of the guys that you're really surprised that were even there?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Marty Gilliard, an elusive receiver, one of the most elusive receivers in the draft, steps up in big games. Everson Griffin, not crazy about him, but he is a second-round talent. Great, quick first step, could be a situational pass rusher in the NFL. I thought Eric Norwood gave tremendous value, and Corey Wooten with the 109th pick to Chicago. Watch film on him from the 08 season when he was 100% healthy. This guy is a player, great size, great length, excellent leg drive.
Echoing our man Pat Fitzgerald, who was telling us that just the other day on Thursday when we had him on, watch that 208 game film. Corey really feels he's close to being at that level in terms of his health. He really didn't get there during the season. If he does stay healthy, get healthy and can stay healthy, I think the Bears really got a kid who would have been a second-round pick had he been 100% in the fourth round. Obviously, that's a risk you take. That's why he was there, because he did have that injury issue. Rev loved Marty Gilliard as well. I think a nice spot for him there with St. Louis. Sam, I am. Bradford needs a weapon. Perfect spot for Gilliard to go to, and a need for the club. They definitely need some more depth at that wide receiver position. Justin, how about you? What's your take? Fourth round, best value.
Everson Griffin, defensive end, goes to Minnesota Vikings. He's a guy who I know, hey, there was a little bit off the field character concerns, wasn't as far as the greatest work ethic type guy, you know, as far as when he was down on the field, he made plays for USC this past year. He's a guy who a lot of people thought, hey, he could have been a late first-round pick in New Orleans, 32nd overall, and no one would question that. So to be able to go in the fourth round to the Minnesota Vikings, be able to play, you know, behind Jared Allen there as far as be able to rush the passer, I thought that was a great value for the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, we have somebody in the chat room pointing out that, yes, Armonte Edwards was a homer pick there from that part of the country. And, Rev, how about Mike Williams? You know, somebody just threw him out there in the fourth round, wide receiver out of Syracuse. Definitely a boom or bust guy, in my opinion, once similar to Corey Wooten, could have been a second-round pick, maybe should have been a second-round pick. Different reason him, it's the character issue. He definitely has some clown in him. But what's your thoughts on him going in round number four?
Well, first of all, I like the fact that Tampa Bay took him, and I like the fact that they already went with Aurelius Ben to sort of insure themselves against this guy being a bust, and they really do need help at that wide receiver position. And he has a great opportunity with this Tampa Bay team because, let's face it, you know, their best receiver right now is Michael Clayton, and, you know, so I think he really has a chance to see a lot of playing time in his rookie season. But I don't think he's a value pick in the fourth round because of his character issues, because of the fact that he quit on his team. I mean, if that doesn't really discourage you about a player, it doesn't get any worse than that. So I think, you know, that's about where he belongs. And, you know, it worries me, you know, a guy becomes a pro, goes to a place like Tampa, nice weather, a lot of places to go to, and he's going to have a lot of free time on his hands. So I think, you know, if you get him in the fourth round, you don't take a big gamble. You'll make a huge investment in this guy. So if he doesn't pan out, you know, he doesn't kill you.
Hey, Justin, let me ask you about another player who a lot of people had pegged going much earlier. Basically, everybody had Aaron Hernandez going much earlier. Most people had him going around number two. What were your thoughts on New England being able to pick up yet another tight end on day three of the draft in the fourth round in the Florida Gator and the the John Mackey Award winner, Aaron Hernandez.
I thought it was a great value pick for the New England Patriots, and then to also to combine it with Rob Gronkowski. I mean, they really upgraded their tight end position. They needed some playmakers there on that offense. They were getting a little bit older. I mean, obviously, the biggest concerns was with him was off-the-field type issues, character issues, and we see what the NFL is trying to do, is trying to clean up that things with, you know, the suspensions that they've had, you know, for us, and they've passed down here just in the offseason. So I think that was the biggest concern for the NFL team, saying, hey, we don't want to take him in the second round, give him a lot of money, kind of as far as that Mike Williams, kind of what the Rev was saying about Mike Williams, is, hey, this guy's got some concerns, you know, so, hey, let's not take him, let's not put a huge investment in him. He's a great player. If he pans out, gets everything cleaned up, matures off the field, he's a guy who could be a great value for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I think it was a really intriguing pick there, and they're kind of different guys, him and Gronkowski. So even though they got two tight ends, I think they could complement each other well. Before we move on to the fifth round, Rev, I want to ask you about one guy who I thought was interesting, Thaddeus Gibson out of Ohio State going to the Pittsburgh Steelers in the fourth round. Obviously not quite the production that Vernon Golson had as a Buckeye, but you're getting him in the fourth round. You're trying to do a similar transition. One, do you think he's got more of the ability to transition? And two, don't you think this was kind of the perfect spot for him to go to if you want to be a defensive end who's going to play outside linebacker? Go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've done such a great job of identifying these type of players and then coaching them up once they get them.
Yeah, it is a great spot because what the Pittsburgh Steelers do is, you know, they don't make you play for the first 1 or even 2 years a lot of times, you know, when you are that type of player trying to make that transition to outside linebacker. You know, they mold you, they break you down, they mold you, they build you back up again, and then they see if you can sink or swim. And by the third year, you know, they should have an idea of whether or not you can contribute and even be a starter ultimately for their defense. I think this was a great pick. You know, this is what you do with these types of picks in this round, in the fourth round. You take guys with high upside. You take the guys with quickness and great athletic ability. You know, even if they're a little raw, you coach them up. You don't have to play them right away. So I think this was a great spot for Thaddeus Gibson.
Yeah, good point, Rev. I think this is when you roll the dice, not in the first round, not in the top 20. Once you get to these fourth, fifth rounds, this is when you can kind of roll the dice a little bit. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Recap Show. First time ever, 3 days. And don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com and get your post-draft PDF. That's right, the post-draft PDF is on sale now. We will recap each and every team's NFL draft, as well as a little fantasy football preview for all your fantasy nuts out there. We go from one war room to another one. Justin, fifth round. Give me your top two value picks in round number five here as we move along the show.
Well, the guy who I really like was Ricky Sapp there in the fifth round with the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, he comes in just going to have to be a situational pass rusher there. They like those undersized defensive ends that could possibly be an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense, kind of like a Trent Cole there that was drafted out of Cincinnati a number of years ago. So I really like that value going to the Philadelphia Eagles, a winning program. And then another guy that I really liked as far as with the Jacksonville Jaguars, they took Austin Lane out of Murray State. And I thought he's the guy who played well at the Senior Bowl, showed well as far as it, you know, far as the NFL Combine and as far as the postseason, a guy who was kind of rising up the draft board, and you know, a lot of people thought, hey, this guy could be a second or third round pick. The Jacksonville Jaguars get him in the fifth round at the defensive end, and they're looking for, you know, they need more pass rushers. They was last in the league in sacks, and yes, they signed Aaron Kampman, you know, as far as, and they're trying to rebuild that defensive line to be able to get after the quarterbacks. They need to be able to do that as far as in the division that they're in. So I really thought that was a great value for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I really like the Austin Lane pick as well. I'm pretty high on that kid. Ricky Sapp, I know Rev's got him written down as well. I get the idea of great value. I personally just don't think he's that great of a football player. But, hey, I can't knock it as a fifth-round guy. Rev, how about you? Other than those two guys, who are your top two value guys in the fifth round?
Well, you know, I've abused Denver enough, so now I'm going to give him some praise. I'm going to give him some credit for going with Parrish Cox with the 137th pick. Look, I know the kid comes with a lot of baggage, and that's why I wouldn't even touch him in the second or third rounds, but they took him in the fifth round. He's an outstanding athlete. He could play in man-to-man or zone coverage. He's quick, agile, quick change of direction skills. He can tackle and return kicks. He gives you a lot, but the character issue, yeah, I mean, whatever, but he's a fifth-round pick, so if he doesn't pan out, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Cam Thomas is also a pick that San Diego made that I liked a lot. You know, they not only make a value pick here, but they make a need pick. They lost Jamal Williams. They bring in a 330-pound nose tackle in Cam Thomas. Good hand skills, maintains leverage versus the run. He could occupy two blockers. I think this guy should have gone in the second or third round. You get him in the fifth round, tremendous value.
Rev getting back in the good graces of Josh McDaniels by giving him a little love with his fifth-round pick after taking it to him in rounds number one and rounds number two. I got to go with my man Arthur Jones out of Syracuse, another kid who slipped because of injury issues. I feel like I'm getting a little too much with these injury guys, but I think, once again, if he could stay healthy, I think they got a tremendous value. They got a second, third-round type pick. And for a team that likes to play multiple fronts, Arthur, I think, is an ideal. Jones can play a 3-4 defensive end or a 4-3 defensive tackle, I think. So he definitely brings, I think, a lot of value at that spot to the Baltimore Ravens. It was a deep, you know, this fifth round really showed you how deep this draft is with guys like Parrish Cox and Ricky Sapp and Cam Chancellor, some big-name players, Cam Thomas, who many people projected to go in rounds two and three. Rev, quickly, before we leave the draft, what's your thoughts on the big kid, John Skelton, going to Arizona in the fifth round?
Well, yeah, another project-type guy, but a guy that comes with tremendous upside, big arm, tremendous size. I think that says a lot about what the Arizona Cardinals think about Mr. Matt Leinart. I think he's going to have a very, very short leash going into the season. And let's not forget, not only did they bring in John Skelton, they also acquired Derek Anderson from the Browns in the offseason. So I think that John Skelton is in a great situation here. I think if he shows, you know, significant improvement in his first 2 years, I think he can definitely be a starter for the Arizona Cardinals. He's got to work on his footwork a little bit, needs to put a little bit more touch on his passes, but he's got, I think, probably the best arm out of all those three quarterbacks with the Arizona Cardinals right now.
And also our buddy Rick Saratella there, our founder, is in the chat room with us as well, and I can't believe I almost forgot James Starks, our guy, going in the fifth round to the Green Bay Packers. Rick pointed out that this is the last season for Ryan Grant in Green Bay. Starks is going to take over that job by the end of the year. I have no doubt about that myself. I think, no question at all, I think we're going to see James Starks be the eventual running back of the Green Bay Packers by latest 2011, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does take over that job in 2010. Let's go to round number six here as we move along here on the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Recap Show. Justin, give me your top two value guys in round number six.
Well, I think, you know, as far as, you know, Tony Pike is a great value there with the Carolina Panthers. The question was, hey, does he fit there with, you know, with a guy like you pick Jimmy Clausen in the second round and you go ahead and you get him in the sixth round. And then another guy who I liked as well as far as a quarterback is there is Dan LeFever from Central Michigan. As far as goes to the Bears, yes, he's going to be a backup. But if we look at the backup behind Jay Cutler, there's not a ton there. And he can develop. And, of course, you always need quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think that's what we don't ever always emphasize enough is that you need those second-string quarterbacks, third-string quarterbacks. Because if you look at the history of the quarterback position, as far as not a ton of guys start all 16 games, unless you're Brett Favre, you know, or Peyton Manning, you're going to get dinged, you're going to miss a game here or two, and then you also have to have value of, hey, we look at what the Philadelphia Eagles was able to do. They sat there, they allowed Kevin Cobb to develop, and then they traded Don McNabb for a second-round pick. So then they got value for that there, so then they could go ahead and get these help on defense. So I think as far as quarterbacks, and when you have multiple quarterbacks that you can develop, and then you can always use them as assets, I always liked what Ron Wolf always did with the Green Bay Packers. He always drafted a quarterback to develop, and then he would trade it away, whether it was Matt Hasselbeck or whether it was Aaron Brooks, you know, or whether it was Mark Brunell. They were all behind Brett Favre, and he was able to trade them for assets as far as draft picks later in, as far as in their career, and they all became starters in the NFL.
Hey, Justin, I got to have a little fun with you since we got somebody bringing this up in the chat room. Is there any chance Tony Pike could be Matt Flynn to Jimmy Clausen's Brian Brohm in the sense that the guy drafted later sticks around longer with the franchise?
I don't think so. I think Jimmy Clausen is going to be that franchise quarterback. It's going to be a guy who you're all going to say, hey, 3 years down the road, you know, Jimmy Clausen, maybe he wasn't that bad. Maybe he should have been a first-round pick. I think Jimmy Clausen is going to be a – I think that what it thing it does is it humbles him and makes him work harder. And as far, and I think it really is going to test true test of his character, what he's going to be able to do with going there in Carolina. So I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Tony Pike's going to be a guy who's going to be a backup, and maybe down the road Carolina can trade him for a draft pick.
All right, Rev, let's move on to the next round, round number six. Top value guys, top two in the second in the sixth round.
Well, since our man Rick Sertel is out there listening, I'm going to put a smile on his face. I'm going to go with Carlton Mitchell, the big wide receiver. Cleveland took him with the 177th pick. You're talking about a Brandon Marshall-like 6'4" wide out with deep speed, the ability to pluck the ball out of the air with his hands, make plays in traffic, tough kid, and has enormous upside. I love that pick. And then also you have to go with Jonathan Dwyer. I mean, who even thought he was going to go down this low, was going to drop down this far? Workhorse, inside runner, powerful legs, good vision, short area agility, and I think that he fills a role with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think him and Mendenhall should make a nice 1-2 punch, him being Mr. Inside and Mendenhall being, you know, the guy that sort of goes outside a little bit more, a little bit more speed. I think this is a great fit for Mr. Jonathan Dwyer.
Agreed. Once again, another guy going to Pittsburgh, perfect type player there. They love those big physical in-between tackles runners, and that's what, exactly what they're getting with our man JD. Justin, sixth round, who's your top value guys in round number six?
You mean round number seven?
Yeah, he gave us his sixth round.
Oh, he gave us his sixth round already.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Rev, yeah, you talked about Carlton Mitchell. He's another player we're big fans of. So, Justin, take it away. Kick off round number seven for us.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, I'm going to go again and go after the quarterback position, and I think Levi Brown from Troy going to the Buffalo Bills. And he's a guy, he could go in that, and who knows? He could be the starter at late in this NFL season, being a seventh-round pick. And when I saw him down in the Texas First Nation game, he's got a good, strong arm. He's very compact. He's able to move around. And he's a guy, to me, who could be a, you know, steal as a guy just because he's going to a system where they don't have any quarterbacks, really. They don't have an established guy who, you know, was a, hey, he's locked, trenched in there. Trent Edwards, Brian Brohm, you know, as far as those guys that they're at Buffalo, they're, no one's really taken a hold of that position and really run with it. So Levi Brown, to me, the position, he could definitely be going there and be a starter down the road here, even possibly as early as 2010. And Dakota Watson from the Florida State Seminoles and going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they had a, you know, as far as a Florida State Seminole back in the day, playing that outside linebacker position when they were winning all those championships. And hey, I'm not saying he's him, but he's a guy who's a fast, athletic, outside linebacker, you know, who could come in there and play in that Tampa 2 scheme, be a starter. Tampa needs help on in that defense, and he's a guy, to me, he's going to be a starter sometime next season.
Yeah, a couple of interesting guys there for sure. We have from the chat room a Rusty Smith sighting from Florida Atlantic. I felt guilty when I saw that pick because we jumped off Rusty's bandwagon. We had him as a draftable guy since his sophomore year, and we moved him down the board this year, and he ended up going drafted. A little egg on our face, or at least mine, I feel. Charles Scott, a.k.a. Chuck the Truck, going to the Eagles, another kid that we really like. And I know he's happy to go to Philly. He gets it that even though he went lower than he wanted to go, he gets that that's a you know, great spot for him to land in. So I think, you know, good stuff there for Charles Scott out of LSU. Rev, I'm going to throw it to you for your top value picks in round number seven.
Yeah, the guys that I really liked, and again, I'm going to give Denver some love here. I'm hoping to get back in the good graces of Mr. Josh McDaniel. I'm going to go with Saquon Thompson, the cornerback out of California. Denver took him with the 225th pick. I think he was the most physical corner in this draft, has instincts, short area quickness. He hits you like a truck. You know, he lacks long speed. He's more of a slot type of corner. But he's an excellent wrap-up tackler. He can also return kicks. At this point in the draft, you got a guy like Saquon Thompson, I think he could be a big-time contributor to any defense out there. And also kind of surprising that Selvish Capers, the tackle out of West Virginia, went to the Redskins, that he went this low at the 231st spot. You're talking about a guy with tremendous feet. He can mirror pass rushers and pass protection. He can get to the second level as a run blocker. And I think down the road, I think this guy has the physical tools to develop into a left tackle. You know, and as far as seventh-round reaches go, I have to go with Sean Canfield, the quarterback out of Oregon State. I never really liked this guy. To be quite honest with you, I'd rather have a guy like Max Hall out of BYU over this guy. Sean Canfield hasn't shown me much. He's a weak-armed quarterback. He's slow in reading his progressions. He doesn't anticipate his receivers getting open, and he also does not handle pressure very well. What are your seventh-round reaches? Do you have any there? Hello?
To me? Yeah, I think as far as the reaches, obviously, I mean, you look at the last pick of the, you know, the draft, the Mr. Irrelevant, and Tim Toon there from Weber State. I thought the Lions could have done, you know, something better than going there, you know, going to wide receiver position. They're loaded there. They could have went for a linebacker or as far as some secondary help, a safety there. And then as far as another reach that I thought was, you know, Ray Fisher, the cornerback from Indiana with the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know if it's cheaper just to have him come from Bloomington up to, you know, Indianapolis. I don't know if they were saying, hey, whoever's the closest guy, we're going to draft him. So, I mean, but the seventh round is, hey, you know, what are we going to do there? You know, Zach Robinson was the quarterback there at Oklahoma State. Was, you know, that could be saying, hey, you know, could he do something with New England? I mean, so you never really know what's going to happen with these seventh rounds, or then if we get into the undrafted rookie free agents, where they go and what kind of impact they can make on a team.
All right, and those are the seventh-round guys. I'm going to pass on that. I feel bad telling a kid you were reaching the seventh round. They're happy to hear their name called, and we're throwing, you know, water on them there. All right, but our first guest is on the line right now, and it's none other than Mr. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, one of the best in the biz when it comes to covering the NFL, in particular the NFL draft, our favorite writer from around the country. John, how are you this morning? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great, guys. It's always fun on Sunday to have time to actually review everything. The last 3 days working so much, especially with two primetime games, and you don't have time to really check out the league. I had to grade every team yesterday, which is ridiculous, but, you know, the bosses want it. The readers like to disagree, and something I also like doing it 4 years later. But by and large, I think this draft, we all agreed, was deep. And so teams should get better. I feel bad every year Indianapolis drafts low. I give them like a C or C minus, and I know they're going to have players just because Bill Polian finds those players. I just don't know who they are. So every year I'm low. And then if you look at it 4 years later, it was a pretty good draft for the Colts.
All right, John, before we start getting into the specific players, as we've said before when we've had you on, you've been along for this draft ride, you know, for a while now, and you've really seen the evolution from it being something that, you know, people read in the paper the following day almost as an afterthought to finally making it to TV. What's your thoughts the first year that we saw this going to prime time and making it a 3-day event?
Well, I liked it from a writer's standpoint. It gave me more time to write because I also have to tweet, blog. After, for instance, just so the listeners will know what a newspaper guy does, and I don't know that all of them do this, but used to I'd sit there and watch it all day. At the end of the day, I'd write. And now the Texans, I start tweeting from the time I get up on things I hear, on my reaction to things that I hear around the league, and then I tweet when the Texans pick, give a quick synopsis, then I send in a story for our website, cron.com, then I send in a blog for cron.com, kind of summing it up really opinionated, and then I go to my radio station, and they're set up in the press box, which was where the media was, and then I talk to them, and then I go to a TV station and talk to them, and then I go back and sit down. I got a couple of freelance assignments, so I start working on that, and by then there's been 3 or 4 more picks made, so you don't just sit there and be able to focus like you used to. I loved it that it was stretched out over 3 days. I know the ratings were better, but you didn't have to scramble. When I first started doing this, it was 18 rounds, It's funny to hear a Mr. Irrelevant today go in the bottom of the seventh round when you think of the old days, how many Hall of Fame players were taken after the seventh round. And when I first started this in 77, we would go over to the Oilers' headquarters in their building, and they would put the media on the floor, and they had this big, big white sheet of paper on the wall, and they had, and they would write in picks as they would get them on the phone. And I remember at the time, they had TVs in there so people could watch, like, soap operas. And so it is almost an afterthought, and you go, oh, wow, that's pretty good, or I can't believe they did this. And at the end of the day, you would have everything. But it's changed so much, and I think among us in the media and everybody, like the draft Bible. I mean, there was no draft Bible back then, and because it's a full-time, 24/7, all-year-round job for you guys. Where a guy like me, I watch college football, but I don't get real serious about the draft till after the season, and then I really don't start paying attention to the combine, where you guys are so far ahead. And that's why I think that's one reason that's made it so interesting to the draft niggas around the country, is they have access to information all year round from publications like the Draft Bible.
Well, thanks for the kind words, John. No doubt about it. It is become a 365-year thing. We're already getting ready for 2011. We're going to have information on the site this week. Justin, let me throw it to you. You can throw John your first question.
Well, I think, you know, what do you think as far as the Houston, as far as Texans did when they selected, you know, Ben Tate? Was there any chance of them, you know, trying to jump up from 20 to get Ryan Matthews? I know that's kind of why San Diego went up there and got – was there any thought about them getting up there to the, you know, top 10, top 12 type range to draft him?
The Texans went into this draft with 8 picks, and they wanted to get more. Their M.O. was not to give him up, and they liked Matthews a lot, and that's the guy they targeted. The problem was this. Seattle, which is putting in the same system with Alex Gibbs, they knew Gibbs was going to get a tackle. Alex wouldn't have gone there if he didn't have some kind of assurances he was going to get his guys. So he is putting in the system there with Pete Carroll. And when C.J. Spiller went to Buffalo, there was a good chance Seattle was going to take Ryan Matthews. So not only did Miami have to leapfrog the Texans, they had to leapfrog Seattle, and that's why it was such a great deal for San Diego to get the player they wanted and move. They paid a dear price, but you don't need much like the Chargers, and your running game is pathetic, and that's all you need. Why not give it up? A team like the Texans, trying to get to the playoffs for the first time, has so many needs, they didn't want to give up that many picks. And they had Toby Gearhart, and they had Javid Best. These are the guys they had that are tailor-made for their system. They had Best, but I think they crossed him off because of the injuries. And then they had Gearhart and Tate right together, just like you guys did. So then they had a chance for a 3, did they? And they argued about it. Did they take Gearhart and pass up that 3, knowing that they have Tate rated so close? So they decided to take the 3 and Tate, and they're happy about it. It created a huge controversy here because, like everybody, everywhere, everybody loves Toby Gearhart. He's a throwback. He's a white running back, which we haven't seen in ages. We ask him at the combine, do you think if you were black, you'd be a first-round pick? He said, well, I've always been white. There's nothing I can do about it, and I'm still hoping to be in the first round. And so he was a popular player. I would have loved to have written the story because his dad had a cup of coffee with the Oilers in 87, and I had his quarterback, Andrew Luck, who's from here, calling my radio station where I could interview him. I set it up. I set it up so much I jinxed it. And so they lost him to Minnesota, and they didn't know when Minnesota traded with them, the Vikings were taking Gearhart. They thought they could go a few picks and still have a shot at maybe both of them. They said as soon as Minnesota took him, we started saying, uh-oh, we're going to have to trade back up to be sure we get Ben Tate, and that's what they did. But they had them both rated so close. Their first 3 were need picks. Kareem Jackson, a corner, will start right away. And then Ben Tate, if he, I think he'll start. And then their third pick, Earl Mitchell from Houston, they wanted a tackle. They didn't want a big beef eater. They don't. They want a guy that Bill Kolar can coach up. And he's a great coach, as y'all know. But they needed something he can't coach, and that's speed and quickness. They don't. They've got Amobi Okoye and Sean Cody. Played the run really well, combined for two sacks. I think we could get two sacks in the NFL in one season. So they get Mitchell because he's quick off the ball. They figure they can teach him the rest. And in a perfect world, Mitchell will play next to Antonio Smith in passing situations with Mario Williams and Connor Barwin, who I predict will be their most improved player, will be their ends. And if all goes according to plan, they should have a pretty good pass rush.
I was going to say, John, I think me and you could handle the defensive tackles, and we could let the fleet foot Mancini and Justin come off the edge, and we could get a little pass rush going on.
It is amazing. You know, you can find them on the edge. It's hard to find them in the middle. People here would say, what about Terrence Cody? He's not a pass rusher. Do you know, Terrence Cody is 300, you know, he lost weight for the combine. We all know his weight's going to skyrocket between now and the season to training camp. And he benched fewer than Earl Thomas. So if you're a big tackle taking up space in the middle, you better be strong besides big. And when he came here for the Lombardi Awards, I hosted a breakfast. And Dominican Sue's wearing his jersey, tight as can be. Jerry Hughes, Gerald McCoy wearing their jerseys, tight as can be. And Terrence Cody's wearing a big old warm-up to cover up. And I know what that's like because I do the same thing. Well, if I'm drafting a big tackle on the inside, I want a guy that is strong. I don't care if he's flabby and gooey, but if he's strong and Terrence Cody's not, he'll be a one-down player. And so that's not the kind of guy you want when you're looking for a pass rush.
Hey, John, I find it kind of interesting that the Texans went with a couple of tight ends in this draft, Garrett Graham out of Wisconsin and Doran Dickerson out of Pittsburgh. I understand that Dickerson is probably going to be used as more of a wide receiver. He's not your traditional tight end. But bringing in Garrett Graham, you know, what does that mean for guys like Owen Daniels, guys like Joel Dreesen and James Casey, the outstanding second-year player? How do you think that shakes out?
Well, here's why. I knew they were going to get a tight end. They'll sign a couple of undrafted tight ends because Owen Daniels is coming off major surgery. They will take it easy on him in preseason, training camp. There's no reason they've got to push him, that they can't be overly cautious because he knows the system. He's a great player, so he's not going to be available. Their backup, Joel Dreesen, had major surgery on his shoulder and his ankle, so he's not going to be ready for training camp. And then their third tight end, Anthony Hill, had a reconstructive ACL in December, so I'm guessing he's going to be on IR. So they're going to go into their OTAs, mini camp, and training camp with James Casey as the only tight end on the block. So they get Graham. Dickerson is definitely going to wide receiver. They're going to put him behind Andre Johnson and tell him to watch and learn. It's funny. Dickerson's a tight end. Johnson's taller and heavier. That's kind of weird. And so Dickerson will go out there after putting on that big show at the combine, and I'm guessing he'll probably be he'll be on a practice squad as a rookie because they got plenty of wide receivers. And the other one, though, when all the tight ends are healthy, I don't think Hill will be healthy this year, so I think they'll have four. And Kubiak likes to keep four against certain defenses or certain plans he has, and then he makes the other one inactive. And if Graham, they think Graham reminds them of Daniels, who also came in the fourth round. But I hope he doesn't take playing time away from James Casey, because this year, instead of moving Casey around, they're putting him as the move tight end, and they're going to leave him there and see what he can do.
Hey, John, you brought up the deal that the Texans made and Minnesota going with Toby Gerhardt. I mean, can you even get on the Texans there? I was pretty stunned with that Gerhardt pick going to Minnesota. How about you? That was, to me, that was one of the more surprising picks we saw in the early rounds.
We knew they had to get a back to replace Chester Taylor, and you didn't know what kind of back. I thought it would be somebody with a little more breakaway speed, but as it is, you know, Gerhardt's career may not last long because his running style and the fact he had so many carries at Stanford, but the fans are going to love the guy. And then he might be able to spell Peterson a little bit more, but I still was surprised they did it there. I thought their back would come in a later round, like third or fourth. Let me ask
Justin, I cut you off before. Go ahead, jump in.
No, the question I had before with Ben Tate was, you say, hey, you think he's going to start. Is that an indictment of Steve Slayton not being healthy or just not being the player that the Houston Texans wanted him to be?
Well, I think here's the deal about Slayton. You know, he had a great rookie year, had almost 1,700 yards, didn't have a fumble till late in the season. So last year, he just didn't run well. Now, they lost their starting guards in the first month of the season, but he wasn't running like he did the year before that. But what's weird is he was great out of the backfield. He ended up, before he got hurt, 44 catches, averaged about 10 yards at 4 touchdowns. So he did really well in that department, did not fumble as a receiver, lost 7 fumbles as a running back in 8 games. So they kept, you know, telling you this has got to stop. So they would bench him and they would put him in. Then he got hurt, thought it was a shoulder injury, and then he quit fumbling when he got hurt. And it turned out he made it worse and had surgery on his neck. And he's supposed to be 100%, but did the surgery cure the fumble problem? Did the surgery make him run like he did 2 years ago? The fact is they like Slayton. Slayton is the starter. But unless we see the Slayton we saw 2 years ago, and I don't know why we would based on what I saw last season, and you can't blame it on the offensive line because in the last 2 games, Arian Foster rushed for 216 yards and 3 touchdowns with Chris White at journeyman and Casey Stutter, 6th-round pick at guard, and Chris Myers at center, and they blew away the Dolphins and the Patriots. And so I don't think it's all on the line. So I'm just thinking that Tate, he will start ahead of Slayton we saw last year if he's half as good as he's supposed to be in this system. And if not, it could be Arian Foster. If Foster picks up where he left off last season, he's 225. He looked really good. But they didn't want to, like, put all their eggs in the basket of a guy that had 2 good games, especially an undrafted rookie.
Okay.
Yeah, also, I wanted to ask you about the outstanding linebacker who was taken in the 4th round, Darryl Sharpton, out of the U, out of Miami. And I have to tell you, I love this linebacker. He's very intelligent, takes good angles, very instinctive guy. He's all over the place, and he hits you like an 18-wheeler. Where do you see Darryl Sharpton fitting in?
Well, that surprised me because I thought they were going to go for need. But instead, the second day, they started going for the best athlete on their board. And so they said Sharpton was the best. They wanted defense, and he was the best athlete on their board at that point. And they don't need a starter, but they said he played in the middle. As it is right now, if any of their if the starting middle linebacker, D'Amico Ryans, or the starting strong linebacker, Brian Cushing, got hurt, the weak side linebacker would move into those positions. That's Zach Dials because he's played both. As it is now, they have backups in Xavier Devey and Kevin Bentley, but they do not have a backup in the middle to Ryans. And so they expect Sharpton to be a great special teams player and to come in and be a backup in the middle and on the weak side. And so that was the best athlete pick, and it's hard to argue. When teams don't do it, we get mad. And then when they do it and pass up players that need positions, we get mad too.
Yeah, we just need something to complain about the day after the draft. John, I'm looking at your blog right now at blogs.cron.com from the Houston Chronicle. That's blogs.cron.com/NFL, where you can check out John McClain's one of the best football blogs that are out there. And you can also find John on Twitter. And I see, you know, your NFC draft grades. You gave the highest grade went to Seattle with an A. We've talked a lot about the Seahawks already, but you also had the 49ers with an A-. talk to us a little bit about what you really liked about what San Francisco did.
They got two starters. I'm just assuming Anthony Davis is going to put it all together. You know, at the start of the offseason, he was a high number one pick. Then he didn't do very well in the offseason. I'm amazed at how players go up and down based on how they look in shorts and how they act in shorts when scouts have every film of every game in practice to look at him. But I'm assuming they need help. Davis and Upati will start. Taylor Mays has a chip on his shoulder the size of the Andreas Fault. That guy was so upset at the world because he didn't go high in the first round. I think you're going to see a Taylor Mays with an attitude. And then I thought getting Navarro Bowman in the third round, I thought he'd go in the second. Getting Anthony Dixon in the sixth, I thought he'd go in the third or fourth. Dixon will help. He'll spell Frank Gore. So they got some players. Four, the way I look at it, they got five guys who are going to help them right away. The draft that I thought was the most surprising, and I think we all agree, is that did they lock Al Davis in a closet? Raiders. This is not a Raiders draft. It's too good. It makes too much sense.
John, you hit it on the head, buddy. I mean, we're watching these picks, and me and Ralph were actually sitting next to each other saying that the Raiders just take the best football player, not the best athlete, and I think we simultaneously said they must have locked this guy up somewhere.
They must have kidnapped him, yeah.
It just makes sense.
Hey, John, why don't you break down this quarterback class? You know, we all thought going in it was a relatively weak quarterback group of guys available in this draft. We talked about Tim Tebow being a reach in the first round. You know, who are some of the guys that you think are going to make it ultimately, and some of the guys that you think will maybe be busts down the road at that quarterback position?
I like what the Rams have done the last 2 years to get some help in their offensive line after they had drafted for their defensive line. And it hasn't worked the way they wanted. Having Steven Jackson to take pressure off Bradford is good, but it's too bad they can't put Bradford and Jackson in some kind of suspended hibernation and bring them and thaw them out in about 5 years when they're actually good, because Jackson is being wasted with a terrible team. You know, he's won six of the last 40, and they've got their – you wonder about the money they're going to have to pay him with the ownership situation still unsettled. I've decided, and I listened to all the talking heads, the ex-NFL head coaches and everything, and I've decided I would not play a young guy, especially an underclassman, with a terrible team. It's one thing if you're Big Ben coming into a team that's got a great rushing game and defense and stuff like that, and even if you're going to be Flacco going with a great defense, great running game, and the same as Matt Ryan. He had Michael Turner, had that great season when he came over from San Diego. Defense was good enough. Those guys got things around them. The Rams don't have a defense, and the Rams' offense is Jackson and nothing else, and that's why I think if they play him, they're going to hurt him, but who knows what they're going to do. You know, Jevon Snead not getting drafted. I thought he would get drafted somewhere. Colt McCoy was not surprised. The reason I like Colt McCoy is I'm partial, of course, because I've seen his whole career. Mike Holmgren's not coaching now. And if something happens to Andy Reid, like if they finally run Andy off, Andy will be in Cleveland. And those guys are good to know how to handle quarterbacks. So much of these quarterbacks is who's handling them, what kind of stability do they have. Say Clausen goes to Carolina, and then I was amazed. I thought it was really, really cool that Carolina took him, turned around, and I know Armani Edwards is probably going to be moved, and then getting Tony Pike too. But you know, this shows they want a quarterback. Well, what if Fox is fired? You know, what if then we got a lockout? Fox is going in the last year of his contract. That's not the kind of stability you want trying to develop your quarterback. So I'm just gonna say McCoy because he's with Holmgren, and Holmgren as a coach was a proven developer of quarterbacks, and we don't know what Mike DePrez is going to be, but I'm going to say him. If Mike Shanahan had taken one, I would think that. And I tell you what, Josh McDaniel's career is going to be made he's going to be a boom or bust coach based on this pick, and we all want Tebow to do well, but I just can't imagine taking him in the first round based on what everybody said going into the draft.
Great points, John. Great points as always. John, thank you very much for joining us this morning and breaking down the NFL draft for us.
Guys, my pleasure. Anytime. I enjoy the Draft Bible. It helps get me through the draft, and can't wait to see. I'm glad you guys are having to work on 011 and not me, but I can't wait to see who you got. I'll be reading. Thank you.
Great, John. Thanks a lot. And that is John McClain from the Houston Chronicle. You can catch him on the web at blogs.cron.com as well as Twitter. The Wiley Old Veteran is on Twitter as well. You can check him out there. And our next guest as we move the show along is our very own Mr. Ben, Little Ben Klein, as we're calling him now. Justin, let's start with you. What's your first question? Throw one to Ben as he joins us this morning.
Well, hey, Ben, you know, what's your take on Tim Tebow? Everybody's got an opinion on him. I know as far as the Rev already killed, as far as McDaniels. What's your take on as far as McDaniels taking Tim Tebow in the first round?
I mean, I understand it. He worked him out for 7 straight hours and fell in love with him and decided that this is the quarterback that he wanted to tie his future to. I've been referring to Tebow as the anti-Cutler. He doesn't have his physical strength, but everything that he's lacking in the mental department, Tebow has in terms of leadership. And I mean, he really is just the anti-Cutler. Now, in my own personal evaluation of him, I don't see a player who can throw wide receivers open. I don't see a player who goes through his progressions in a quick, efficient manner, and I don't see a player who's got just the inherent ability to sling the ball down the field in a vertical offense, and which is required in today's NFL. Maybe he proves me wrong. I'm rooting for him. I never root for a player to fail. I always root for players to prove me wrong, so I'm hoping he does, but I just don't see it.
And as far as you think that this draft here with as far as Josh McDaniels, with basically trading a Tim Tebow for Jay Cutler and a Brandon Marshall for Darius Thomas, do you think it's a make or break year for Josh McDaniels?
Not this year, but I think it's going to be a make or break 2 or 3 years. I think that Pat Bowlen, the owner of the Broncos, is going to give McDaniels a pretty wide berth in how he handles the situation. I don't think that McDaniels will have an opportunity to draft another quarterback if it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Tim Tebow just isn't going to make it. I think if that happens, McDaniels is gone. He'll be given a few years to prove that. It won't be a make-or-break year next year because Kyle Orton's going to start the whole year, and Tebow's not going to see the field except for a few occasional nifty little, I think they call them wild horse packages over there with no Sean Moreno. So that's what he'll see the field this rookie year. I think McDaniels will be given 3 years to prove Tebow is an NFL quarterback, but he won't be given a chance to take another quarterback after him if it doesn't work out.
Hey, Ben, why don't you weigh in on what the New York Jets did in the fourth round? They traded up 12 spots to get Joe McKnight, and they traded Leon Washington to Seattle. Do you think that Joe McKnight was worth trading up for, and do you think they would have been better off with Leon Washington? You know, McKnight is a guy that brings a little speed, but is a kind of like a one-dimensional outside runner with ball security issues. What do you think about what the Jets did there in the fourth round?
Off the bat, I would love to criticize and say that they're crazy for getting rid of Leon Washington and bringing in Joe McKnight to replace him, but I don't have Leon Washington's medical records in front of me. And if the Jets know something about his leg that will impact his explosiveness, his cutting ability, or his ability to be an effective player, then I'm a fan of the move, but I just don't have those medical records. So it's kind of a wait-and-see approach. If Leon Washington goes on to set Seattle on fire and proves with Pete Carroll that he's an incredible player still, then it was a terrible mistake by the Jets. But if Joe McKnight ends up being the same exact player that Leon Washington is because Leon Washington is hurt, it was a good move.
Hey, Ben, let me ask you, who are your big winners? Give me 2 or 3 teams that you thought were the big winners of this weekend.
Sure. Seattle was one of my big winners, Detroit and Oakland. And then those three teams just jump off right off the bat.
Yeah, it's amazing the Raiders are there, man. We chuckled about it before as you were waiting. take me to Detroit. You know, other than Sue, what did you like best about what they did? I mean, Sue's the obvious guy, but move on from there. What did you like about the depth of their draft?
I like their depth of the draft because, well, all right, Speedy, the third-round cornerback, his one problem is that he's not the fastest guy on earth. But when you have Ndamukong Suh in front of you, you don't have to cover for more than 3 or 4 seconds. So he'll be able to hold up on that island for those 3 seconds. That was a real quality pick, and he might start from day one opposite Chris Houston. Now, the other move that I really liked was Javid Best. Best is going to never see an eight-man front playing for the Detroit Lions with Calvin Johnson on the perimeter and Matthew Stafford throwing the football. Javid Best will never, ever see an eight-man front, and he'll use his speed and quickness to just dissect these lame run defenses that he'll see because they're so scared of Calvin Johnson. Another thing about Best that's so incredible is that Stafford is a very aggressive quarterback, and sometimes he doesn't like to check the ball down. He'd rather try and force it into a tight window. With Best's ability to break long runs and to turn something out of nothing, I think Bradford will be much more inclined to throw that check down pass and let Best just work his magic. I think that'll really help Stafford's completion percentage and cut down on his turnovers.
Also, Ben, were you kind of surprised that Buffalo didn't go with a quarterback until the seventh round when they took Levi Brown? I mean, what do you make of that quarterback situation there in the Great White North?
It's the worst in football. I mean, at least Oakland now has Jason Campbell, too, and Bruce Gradkowski is not the end of the world. It's not just Jamarcus Russell's awfulness anymore in Buffalo. Or not in Buffalo, Oakland. But in Buffalo, it's just a stinky mess. There's just no other way of putting it. Chan Gailey likes mobile quarterbacks, and there are no mobile quarterbacks this year. I think Chan Gailey already has his eyes set on Jake Locker. I think Jake Locker's already the guy for him, and he's identified that, and he wants to sit there and wait for him. I don't know how long Ralph Wilson's got to wait, so I hope he gets to see it. But Buffalo's quarterback situation just completely confounds me. I just don't understand what they're doing or what they have been doing for years. I mean, I don't understand why they benched J.P. Losman in the first place. You know? Like, I've never understood what Buffalo's been doing with their quarterback situation.
All right. Before we let you go, Ben, as we have another guest on the line waiting, who are your two or three, I guess, losers, so to speak, of the draft? Which teams do you think didn't play the game well?
Absolutely. Cincinnati off the bat. It's not that Cincinnati reaches. They don't. They just take boom or bust prospects. They take Andre Smith, who's fat. They take Ray Mayalugu, who's got a drinking problem. Then this year they take Jermaine Gresham, whose knees might already be totally shot. Then they take in the second round Carlos Dunlap, another player who might have a drinking problem. And then and then they end up taking Geno Atkins down the road, another player who is appropriately slotted, but he's got serious motor problems. I'm tired of watching the Bengals constantly take red-flagged players and then wondering what happens why it goes wrong. It's just a little embarrassing. And then another team that I really was not that impressed with was the Washington Redskins, and that's because I just don't understand picking Trent Williams over Russell Okung. It's not that Okung can't play in his own scheme. Okung's in Seattle. He's playing for Jeremy Bates. Bates is the former offensive coordinator for Mike Shanahan. Williams and Okung are going to play the exact same position in the exact same offense, so we're going to know real quick who the better player is. And I think that if Okung becomes an elite left tackle and Williams becomes a decent right tackle who can swing to the left tackle occasionally, I think Redskins fans are never going to forgive Shanahan, regardless of Donovan McNabb.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll be following your stuff on the NFL Draft on our site, NFLDraftBible.com. You're going to have your winners and your losers, I believe top five each, posted sometime today, and make sure all the listeners out there check that out. Ben, thanks a lot for giving us some time.
Have a great day, guys.
All right, and we're moving the show along here. You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest. This is our preview show, and our next guest right now on the line is Mr. Bradley Wells from StampedeBlue.com, a site dedicated to covering the Indianapolis Colts. Bradley, how are you this morning? Thank you for joining us.
I'm tired, man. It's like the one time I could try and sleep in, and I get booked on doing a podcast after 3 days of covering the Colts at the draft. But other than that, I'm very good. How are you guys?
Oh, pretty good. We're running on fumes right now. We've actually been running on fumes, I think, for about the last 5 weeks or so, But we are hanging in there. The light at the end of the tunnel, I can see it in front of me, so that's kind of given us some energy to push forward. Justin, I'll throw it to you to start Bradley off. Justin, are you with us?
He fell asleep.
All right, I think
he's running on fumes, and now he's out of fumes.
I'm here,
Ben. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay, Justin. Sorry about that. Let's throw it to you, and we got Bradley Wells on the line from StampedeBlue.com, site dedicated to the Colts.
Hey, I wanted to see what, as far as Jerry Hughes being that number one overall pick by the Indianapolis Colts. Do you think that's just as far as to add to that pass rushing, and do you think they should have went a different direction instead of adding Hughes?
No, I'm ecstatic over the Hughes pick. I think it was a great selection. Polian said after the pick that Hughes was the last player that the Colts had ranked as a first-rounder on their board. And if someone had taken Hughes before the 31st pick, the Colts would have likely traded out of the first round the way the Minnesota Vikings did. So, I'm very happy about it. And for the last 7 years, 8 years, the Colts have tried in vain to try and find a third rusher. I think we saw in the Super Bowl, the Colt defense just simply is not the same when either Dwight Freeney or Robert Mathis are hurt. And really for the last, two out of the last 3 years in the playoffs, the final game of the playoffs has really been determined by the fact that the Colts just have not been healthy along the defensive line. And when they're not healthy along the defensive line, the opponent can really have its way with the defense. So with Hughes, I think what it does is it extends the lifespan or the career of Dwight Freeney, and it doesn't put as much pressure on him to sort of play every down. And you're going to see packages that involve the three of them on the field at the same time, according to the Colts. You're going to see packages of Hughes coming in and subbing for Mathis, subbing for Freeney. So it's a big deal, and I'm extremely happy about it, and I know the Colts are very happy about it.
Yeah, also, I wanted to ask you about the selection of Pat Angerer. Do you think down the road he might be good enough to eventually replace a guy like Gary Brackett?
Yes, I think so. My issue with Pat Angerer is not him. I just disagree with where he was selected. I think he was in a little bit of a reach there at the second round. I thought that there were players that were available that fit a greater need than Pat Angerer and the Colts passed on them. I'm talking specifically of Charles Brown out of USC. The left tackle position for the Colts, I don't care what Bill Polian says. It's not a good position to be in. Tony Hugo's bust. Charlie Johnson's a nice player. He's a good guy, but he's a utility player. If you're thinking Charlie Johnson's going to go out there and be your left tackle next year and you're going to get back to the Super Bowl, I don't know what to really say with that. I think that that's a little bit of living in fantasy land. The Colts needed to get a left tackle, somebody who could protect Peyton Manning's blind side. And, Charles Brown was right there, and it would have completed a really great first 2 days of the draft for the Colts if they'd been able to snag Hughes and Brown. But they decided that Brown wasn't worth it, and they got Angerer, and I think that that's the reach. And then the Saints, the team that beat the Colts in the Super Bowl right after the Colts picked Angerer, picked up Charles Brown. So that's a little bit of a slap in the face. So I like Angerer. I think he's a good player, and I'm happy that he is a Colt. I just think that it would have been better to get him in third round than in the second round.
Hey, Bradley, we have a question from the chat room here from a Colts fan. They wanted to know your thoughts about Brody Eldridge, the kid out of Oklahoma. I was a little surprised he went as high as he went, but really interesting kid, a tight end who has experience on the offensive line, started at center last year for the Sooners a couple times because of injuries they had there. They wanted to know if where you thought the Colts would use Mr. Eldridge out of Oklahoma.
Well, they're not going to use him as an offensive lineman. That much I know, because Polian – I was asked that point blank yesterday if they were thinking of using this kid and bulking him up, as they say, to get him to play offensive line, maybe left tackle. And Polian was emphatic in saying no. So they drafted Eldridge to be essentially a fullback. And it's a very interesting selection because I don't think the Colts have ever used the draft to find and get a fullback. they've used collegiate free agency to bring in a few guys, maybe like Gian Robinson as a fullback, but they've never drafted one. And that's what this guy, I mean, they made it pretty clear in their press conferences that Eldridge is, he's been brought in to essentially be a inline blocker because that's his strength, and that he's there in order to help them in the short yardage packages, which they have struggled in the last, you know, 3-4 years. And he's they're going to use him as a fullback, as an H-back, double tight end sets. So he's about, what is he, 6'5", or whatever it is, 265 pounds or something like that. So the, you know, the Colts in several two tight end packages, especially those that involve short yardage situations, are going to trot out a 265-pound tight end. And I'm sorry, if you can't open a hole with a 265-pound tight end, you know, something's wrong. So I think that's how he's going to be used. And I like that pick. I mean, it's nice to see them starting to go more, a little bit more in the direction of getting some blockers at tight end rather than these skinny tadpoles that they've been drafting recently who can catch the ball great but can't block.
Justin, do you have any other questions for Bradley?
I basically just wanted to see where – so Charles Brown, you didn't pick the offensive tackle. You think that's a big need then? I mean, as far as you don't think that they can get back to the Super Bowl with the offensive line they have right now?
No, I don't. And I might be in the minority of Colts fans with that. But, we saw Bill Polian just absolutely rip his offensive line upwards and downwards after the Super Bowl. And, you know, there was pressure put on Peyton Manning. And, you know, I think what I personally think is that Polian is now gun-shy of drafting offensive linemen. And he's been awful with it the last 4 years. And he's admitted recently, within the last 2 years, that drafting offensive linemen is not his strong suit. Tarik Glenn, who was the left tackle for many years, was not drafted by Bill Polian. He was drafted by Bill Tobin in 1997. Jeff Saturday was not a drafted player. He was an undrafted rookie that they signed after he was cut from Baltimore. So a lot of the guys who have sort of been the linchpin of the offensive line are players that Polian has not drafted. And I think that with the drafting of Tony Hugo, they traded up to get him in 2007, and he's since turned out to be a bust. And the drafting of Mike Pollock, who's a guard, he was a center at Arizona State, and they've converted him into a guard. And he's been a bust. So that's two first-day picks in the offensive line that have not panned out at all. Both of them have lost starting jobs to players that, you know, the Colts found off the scrap heap. Like Kyle Devan was a, you know, he's playing Canadian football or arena football a year ago, and he came in and he supplanted Mike Pollock, who was a second-round pick. So I think because of those things, I personally think Polian's a little gun-shy, and I don't think he wanted to get a guy, at the second round, an offensive tackle, and have him come in and not pan out. My argument is that you're not going to get back to the Super Bowl with the offensive line we currently have. I just don't see it. And if we do, great. I'll be the first to cheer and be happy about being wrong. But, you're going to go out there in the Super Bowl and you're playing a team like Dallas Cowboys and you got Charlie Johnson going up against DeMarcus Ware. I don't like those odds. So that's how I personally feel about it, and I am very hopeful that I'm wrong.
All right, Bradley, thanks a lot for giving us some time and waking up here on your day to sleep in. We really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Anytime. Thank you so much. Love what you guys do.
Thanks, Bradley. And that is Bradley Wells from StampedeBlue.com. If you're looking for some info on the Indianapolis Colts, go check out that site right now, and you'll get all you need to know about the Indianapolis Colts. That is Bradley Wells from StampedeBlue.com. And we have our next guest on the line, and that is Mr. John Connor from the New York Jets. That's right, no longer of the Kentucky Wildcats, but of the New York Jets, aka the leader of the free world. If you're a Terminator fan, you know what I'm talking about. Hey, John, how's it going today?
Hey, pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. So, how does that sound, you know, being introduced as a member of the NFL? It's official right now. No more, you know, imagining it. We are here. You are in the NFL.
Yeah, I think really it just hit me this morning. I'm no longer a member of the University of Kentucky football team. I'm, I'm not going to say I'm a Jet now.
Hey, John, Ralph here. You know, prior to being drafted by the Jets, did you have any idea that the Jets had such great interest in you? It's kind of interesting how we hear sometimes, you know, prospects, they don't really have any contact with the teams that ultimately pick them in the draft. Tell us about, you know, how did that all, you know, come about with the Jets?
Right, yeah, you said it right. The Jets were a team that I really hadn't talked to that much, maybe just a little. And looking at their situation, I knew their fullback situation could be really good for me. But it was really surprising that they actually picked me up because it wasn't a team that I had talked to a lot. So it was just pretty cool to get picked up by them.
And also, you know, talk to us about, you know, what the Jets have told you, Mike Tannenbaum, and I'm sure, you know, you've spoken to Rex Ryan, the head coach. What have they told you about, you know, what lies ahead for you in your rookie season? You know, the Jets do have Tony Richardson there as a fullback as well. You know, are you going to have an opportunity to start right off the bat?
Yes, they pretty much told me I can have a chance to come in and compete, but I'm looking forward to getting a chance to, you know, look up to a guy like him because he's been the guy that I've looked up to, and I think it'd be a good chance for me to see, you know, what it takes to be a fullback in the NFL, just looking up to him and seeing how he does it.
Yeah, definitely not a bad guy to learn from at all. A veteran, he knows how to do it all. Justin, I'll throw it to you.
Hey, John, I wanted to see, okay, take us through kind of the process that, you know, as far as leading up to getting that phone call to New York Jets. Was it something where you were hearing from a number of teams on as far as draft day, or was it just, hey, you didn't recognize the number, you got a call from an agent? Just kind of take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, the whole day I had my phone on vibrate. I was getting texts from, you know, a lot of my friends and family members, but I hadn't really been getting any calls from any teams. Then I got my phone vibrated again, and I looked up. It was a number that I didn't recognize, and I just figured that was it, and it was. It was the Jets. They said, congratulations. We're going to go ahead and draft you. So.
And who was on that other line there that called you and told you that they were going to draft you?
I believe it was the GM. I talked to everybody. They just went down the line. I talked to the GM, the manager, the head coach, and just everybody, and they were just pretty excited to have me along as a new member.
Cool. Great. So as far as just now you head, you know, for this next weekend over to minicamp and get things rolling there, or kind of what's the plan?
Yes, the 29th is the start of minicamp. So I'm looking forward to going to that and getting acclimated and everything. So I think it'll be a good experience for me.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, I find it kind of interesting, John. You know, we interviewed you in the past. You know, one of the guys that you look up to, that you admired growing up, was Deion Sanders. You know, it's kind of funny that, you know, I would have thought, like, automatically, you being a big fullback, you know, maybe, you know, one of the guys that you try to model yourself after would be a guy like Lorenzo Neal, but it was Deion Sanders. Explain that a little bit, when you were growing up.
Well, growing up, I was a Cowboys fan growing up, and I always used to watch him, and he just stuck out to me. I just liked his whole, like, the way he carried himself on the field. I just liked the way he played, and I just thought it was pretty cool. So, and I had his jersey, too.
I am a primetime fan myself, and we are being joined by our next guest. John, we're going to keep you on the line because your buddy Corey Peters from Kentucky is with us now. I should say Corey Peters of the Atlanta Falcons. Hey, Corey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I can't complain. You know, just living the good life really right now.
I hear you. I mean, I asked John this. How does it feel to be introduced as a member of the NFL? So I'll ask you. You know, you're no longer Corey Peters of the Kentucky Wildcats. You're now Corey Peters of the Atlanta Falcons. How does that sound?
I mean, it just sounds terrific. I think that's a really good situation for me. You know, it's one of the picks that, you know, me and my agent had talked about previously. So it was not really expected, but, you know, something that I was more alert to and, you know, just super exciting. You know, speaking of Deion Sanders, he actually was the person that announced me, so that made it a little bit more better.
Making John a little jealous there because you got Deion to call your name. I'm going to throw a question back to John here. John, in our guide, you know, we have a Q&A with you, and when you were asked your toughest teammate, you said Sam Maxwell. What's up, man? How come no love for Corey Peters?
Well, I really didn't see Corey too much. He was on the D line. He had his hand in the ground, so I was blocking the linebacker a lot on my sub block, so I didn't really see him too much.
All right, Justin, let me throw it to you if you have a question for Corey.
Yeah, I mean, Corey, how do you see you fit in that Atlanta defense? I mean, where do you see you playing in there, and how do you think that as far as that fits your skill set?
Well, I've always been in the 4-3 all my life. It's something I'm extremely comfortable with. You know, I feel like I know the basics of the defense. I know I still have a lot to learn. It's kind of hard to really say how I think I'll fit because, to be honest with you, I really don't. I don't know a whole lot about the tackles that they have, and, you know, I really don't know what exactly they're expecting of me as far as coming in and being on the depth chart, that sort of thing. But all I know is I can go in and work hard and do my best to move up every day in all the coaches' eyes, GM's eyes, and ultimately work my way into the rotation. And in the next couple of years here, have a starting position.
Gotcha.
Corey, I got a question for you from the chat room, and we have somebody, a fan in the chat, that wanted me to ask you about your love for the movie The Notebook. They said they enjoyed following a funny Twitter exchange between you and Devin McCourty. So tell us about, are you a romantic kind of guy, Corey?
Yeah, man. I it's kind of funny. I am who I am. You know, I like romantic comedies, and I hate scary movies, and you know, I love the love stories. I watch Lifetime, all of that. But, you know, it is what it is. I was watching that movie with a girl. She actually made me watch it, basically. And, you know, I loved it. You know, I went out and bought the movie. And, you know, every time it comes on TV, I watch it. So, I mean, I think it's a really good story, a beautiful story about love. And, you know, hopefully one day, you know, I have a spouse that's willing to take care of me when I have Alzheimer's, if I have Alzheimer's.
All right. Well, enough of that lovey-dovey stuff. Let's get back to football. Corey, you know, I think you're in a great situation with the Falcons. You know, Jonathan Babineau has some legal problems, and Perry Ejiri at defensive tackle is returning from an injury. So I think you're going to have an opportunity to show what you're made of. But talk to us about, you know, your college career. You were a guy who just kept getting better and better every year. Tell us about that process. How did you improve as a player each and every season?
Well, you know, it's just something I come into college thinking about. Always trying to improve. After every year, I will watch every single game over from the previous year. Most situations I thought I was awful, you know. Even now looking back at some of my junior year as compared to my senior year, I thought I was awful, you know, and that's a good sign. I felt like continuously getting better. I still feel like I have a long way to go, you know, and I expect, you know, my first year in the NFL to be my best year, you know, and I won't accept anything less than that.
All right, guys, before we let you go, I got one question for the both of you. Now that you're in the NFL, we'll go with John first and then Corey. What are you planning on doing with that first paycheck you're getting?
I plan on saving. I'm not really a flashy guy. I just want to save. I want to, you know, buy me a nice vehicle, a nice place to stay, and I'm good for right now.
And Corey, I mean, after you get a notebook on Blu-ray, what are you going to get?
Well, I'll probably take care of my parents. You know, get them something, whatever it is that they want that I can afford within reason. And that'll be it, most likely. You know, I'm kind of like John in that aspect. I have a car. It's kind of old, but I'm going to ride that till the wheels come off. So that's all good.
Yeah, I hear that. Save, save, save. In this economy, it doesn't matter how much you make, it's good to pack some away. All right, fellas, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. And, of course, congratulations from the NFL Draft Bible for making it to the NFL, guys.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, and that was Corey Peters, now of the Atlanta Falcons, and John Connor, fullback now of the New York Jets, who are on with us. Great stuff from the fellas. We wish them luck moving on to the NFL. All right, guys, we've got a couple minutes left on the show. We talked a lot about, you know, different teams and how they did. Rev, let's start with you. Who are your big winners in this 2010 draft?
Yeah, I'm going to have to start with the Seattle Seahawks. I think they did a terrific job grabbing Okung, grabbing Earl Thomas in the first round. What a 1-2 punch. And then Golden Tate in the second round. They really had a big need at wide receiver, and they bring in a dynamic kid. Walter Thurman in the fourth round, a guy who got injured but is very gifted, good awareness, great tackler. And then even trading for Leon Washington, I think he's going to be a difference maker for that team. And, you know, as far as some other teams that I think did well, I like what the New York Giants did. They always draft well. I like them bringing in these athletic guys like a Jason Pierre-Paul and Chad Jones. But not only were they athletic, I think they were also pretty productive. Phillip Dillard, a very productive guy. Adrian Tracy, they definitely shored up that defense, if nothing else. And I also like what Tampa Bay did. They had a huge need at the wide receiver position. They brought in guys like Aurelius Fenn, Mike Williams in the fourth round, and they also shored up their defensive line, bringing in Gerald McCoy and Brian Price. What a 1-2 punch along that interior defensive line.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rev. I can't disagree with any of those guys. Justin, which teams do you think were the big draft winners in 2010?
Well, I think you go as far as with the Baltimore Ravens. You know, as far as got Sergio Kendall in the second round, got Terrence Cody in the second round, got Ed Dixon in the third round, Dennis Pitt in the fourth round. I mean, those are some very good value picks. And then a guy you liked in the fifth round, Arthur Jones there from Syracuse. So I think they did a great job on the defensive side of the ball. And I think they always do a great job there on that. And I think, you know, cementing what the Rez said about the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, not only did they have a great draft, but they also added Lindell White and Leon Washington at the running back position. That's going to be a 1-2 tandem that I think is going to be a great addition there in the Northwest. And then I also like Tampa Bay as far as Aurelius Ben. They added Gerald McCoy. They added Brian Price. And then the Detroit Lions. I mean, obviously, with taking Dominican Sue and the comments you made, I think I agree with you 100% on that as far as with the level of he's going to be a multi-Pro Bowl type player, having a job to eat best, having a, as far as a, Spivey, and then Jason Fox, who we hadn't talked about, but I really like Jason Fox in a couple years, maybe possibly taking over for Jeff Backus there. So I think there's a lot of teams that did well in this year's draft. I think it was a deep draft as far as we've seen what undrafted rookie free agents have signed. So we're going to have some more talented guys who didn't get drafted who 3 years from now we'll be talking about.
I agree. I mean, I talked about some of these players before, but I really love what New England did with Devin McCourty, Rob Gronkowski, Taylor Price, Aaron Hernandez, even late in the draft, you know, getting a kid like Dedrick in the seventh round who I think fits their scheme. Thomas Welch, a potential starting tackle in the NFL. Teddy Larson, interior lineman. I thought New England did really well top to bottom. Got to give love to the Oakland Raiders, man. Rolando McClain, Lamar Houston, Jared Valdir. I think they got three really good football players later in the draft. Travis Goffel, another kid who's a better football player than he is an athlete. They did go, you know, a couple of Raider picks with Jacoby Ford, the fastest receiver in this draft, in the fourth round. Same with Campbell in the fourth round. So I like where they got those guys. You know, they didn't reach for the speed. They grabbed the speed where it was appropriate. Guys who have potential upside down the road. So I think the Raiders really had their best draft in years, since Al Davis actually knew what was going on, you know. When the velour suits were in style and Al was looking cool wearing the velour suits. And then I also liked what the Rams did. I mean, even though I would have gone Sue over Bradford with number one, but I really like Saffold. Justin, you brought up Murphy. Ralph, you brought up Gilliard. And then also, I love the depth they added after that. Hall Davis, the small school defensive end. Marquise Johnson, a solid nickel corner out of Alabama. Last year, teams tried to pick on him, going away from Arenas and going away from Jackson, and he actually led the team in passes defended, so he more than hung his own. Who else did they get? They got George Selvey late in the draft, Josh Hull late in the draft. So even if those guys don't start, I think they did a good job of providing some depth on their roster, and which is something they really needed. They got the big tight end, Hamano Louie-Louis, and Fendi Anabon, who was an intriguing kid, a former basketball player, another tight end. So they got a really athletic tight end, and they got a real classic inline big blocking tight end. So I think the Rams really helped their roster big time with what they did. Rev, we got about a minute or so left. Quickly, which teams do you think just didn't fare well? We know you don't like the Broncos and what they did. Who else you thought had a poor draft?
I don't like what the Broncos did with their first first two picks. I didn't like what Jacksonville did, and I also didn't like what New Orleans did. You know, they didn't address running back, fullback, linebacker, or defensive end.
All right, Justin, we got about 40 seconds. How about you? Which teams you thought did a poor job on draft week?
Yeah, I agree with Rev, and the only thing I didn't like about Arizona's draft is they traded Brian McFadden to get John Skelton. I really didn't like that standpoint because I like McFadden as a corner there, so I didn't like them trading them. But I think everybody else all did. I think it was a great draft for a lot of teams.
I agree. As I said at the top, I think a lot of the bad teams really improve themselves, and that's what draft week is supposed to be about. That's what the NFL loves. Let's bring everybody to the middle. Let's get as much parity as possible. Folks, don't forget, keep it on NFLDraftBible.com. We are already getting ready for the 2011 NFL Draft. And, of course, don't forget, get that draft recap and fantasy football preview PDF. It's only $7.99. Get it now while supplies last.